So I grew up in Baltimore. I was in a working class family, five kids, two parents above my Sicilian grandparents in Lower Park Heights, Pimlico. And it was a tight neighborhood. You couldn't get away with anything without mama knowing before you hit the front door, because she had this network of people. My dad was a World War II vet, Union man, very loyal Union man. Always talked about his Union brothers and sisters. There was a lot of strikes in the 1950s, and then he would be walking the picket line. So I grew up. All five of us went to Catholic schools. To a Catholic school, grade school, and back then we had to go to Mass 6 days a week, but we had off on Sunday. I mean, Saturday, I'm sorry, Saturday. I wish we had off on Sunday, you know. So anyway, I graduated from school, and I got accepted at Notre Dame of Maryland, which was an all-girls school back then. And I thought I would study science, and unfortunately, when I went to my dad to fill out the financial aid forms, he told me that, I mean, he was a great guy, but, you know, he was a depression baby and left school in the fourth grade. He told me that women didn't need to go to college, but I had advocates and a big sister, and she talked him into it. So I went to Notre Dame of Maryland, and I was a commuter student, and the funny thing is, by the second semester, I dropped out. And I think, when I think back to it, it was probably because I've always been pretty political, even when I was like 10 years old. And the war in Vietnam was raging. And it's really hard to say what it was like. It's about as crazy as now. Only thousands of young men and Vietnamese aren't dying. But, I mean, it was insane. It was just an insane time. And there was a draft. And working class guys and poor guys were getting drafted. And a lot of them were getting sent to Vietnam. I had friends that resisted. Some of them got put in jail or went to Canada, both. So, anyway, college started not to seem that important to me anymore. And I think that was the major thing that I got really politically active. I didn't go back for that second year. Soon after that, I'm sorry, it's not a funny story, but it is what it is. So anyway, I left home. I had to get out of there. It's like I had changed in the blink of an eye. I had been this good Catholic girl. I was a virgin until my first year of college. I was president of the senior class in my Catholic girls' school. And just like everything changed, I became a political radical. And I just wanted to break out from my family. And because I had a really big, big family, like on both sides of my mom and dad's family were all around the neighborhood. And also, I think I had had it with the Holy Roman Catholic Church. So anyway, I got an apartment in Charles Village, and this was old Charles Village. It's real different now. But, I mean, you can't imagine how things changed over, like, you know, 50, 60, 70 years. So anyway, I got an apartment with another young woman at 29th and St. Paul. And I hung out with, at that time, Hopkins was an all-male school. It was, I'm the undergraduate. I'm amazed that people don't even know that now. But it was vast majority white guys from New England. And they had pedigree, prestige, money, you know. And can I say? I wasn't there. But I hung out with a lot of them and Goucher students and other people at Levering Hall because there was an SDS there, Students for Democratic Society. So I was real involved with the war movement. So then through these guys at Hopkins, I learned a lot from them. I met this local guy that had grown up in Charles Village. He was very different than them. And his mother had thrown him out on the street. I'm not sure why, but I mean, it wasn't that big a problem. But anyway, I met him. His name was David. He was tall, lanky. I love people that have like open mouths, like when their mouths aren't tight, you know. And does anybody understand what I'm talking about? You know, yeah. And I mean, he was charming, and I never lived with him, but he had a rented room down the street, and we hung out together. I think our soundtrack was Happy Together. I don't know if y'all know that. It's a Beatles song from the 60s. And anyway, so I wasn't a virgin when I met him, but I didn't do very well on the diaphragm. The pill was out, but it was mostly only available to work to married people so they wouldn't have a whole bunch of more kids. The IUD wasn't available until there were two IUDs that came out in 68. And David was a pool shark. He painted houses and did odd jobs. And so there was this big pool hall down on North Avenue between Charles and St. Paul. And it's been torn down for many decades. But he took take me down there to make some money and show me off to his pool hall friends. And I mean, he was a sweet guy in a lot of ways. You know, I really was. So anyway, of course, like everybody else, I got pregnant, and it's a miracle, you know. I was a school nurse after I retired from Hopkins, and when the kids would come in with all these weird things that they just wanted to get out of class, I would always say, it's a miracle. You know? So anyway, I was pregnant. I was 18. I wasn't ready to have a kid. I really didn't want to tell my family. I was working part-time, didn't have a lot of money. I was Enoch Pratt. And so what happened was David was so streetwise. He knew a doctor, a sort of short guy, probably Puerto Rican, at the time that had an office in Charles Village with some other doctors. And he was a GYN. And we made this appointment with him. I went to the to get an exam. I was about 8 to 10 weeks pregnant. I sort of went into shock, you know, because like I knew I was pregnant. I had missed two periods, but on the other hand, when you hear it, it's a different story. Like, what am I going to do? We didn't have any money. We weren't ready for a kid. We weren't even sure if we ever were going to stay together. Although you always think you're going to stay together when you're newly in love. Anyway, you know how that goes. So anyway, David came into the exam room. Something went down. He took care of business. He arranged to paint the doctor's house so that I could have my abortion. I mean, what a wonderful person. And so anyway, we thought it was going to happen. Oh, I didn't tell you. This doctor, the reason Dave knew him, even though Dave didn't do drugs, he did alcohol, was because kids in the neighborhood were getting uppers and downers, which I don't know if you've heard that term before, but that's like amphetamines, diet pills were big, you know, and barbiturates. So anyway, he would somehow give these young men... That's, you know, so that was like sort of the end. Because most people that did abortions had a, you know, there was always something. So anyway, but I didn't know because I didn't even know how to get an abortion. So anyway, we were supposed to have it done in the office like a week later. And then the guy got into trouble. Some, you know, got into hot water with his practice. So then we arranged to have it done in the apartment that Mary and I share on 29th and St. Paul. So it was springtime, we got ready, you know, we had to have direct lights so he could see my cervix, and he brought his autoclave tools with him, and we had to put pillows under my hips because we had a sofa. We didn't have like a, you know, anything high enough. So anyway, he came. David was there, and so was Mary. I was relieved on a certain level that this was happening, but when it did happen, he brought no sedatives. I didn't have lidocaine like they do when I would help with abortions at Planned Parenthood. Anyway, I had the abortion. I never had pain like I had that night, but it didn't last a whole long time. And afterwards, I bled some, heavy, then moderate, and then I never got an infection. So one thing about the time, one of the beautiful things, was that a couple months later, David and I went out to his house, to the physician's house, and we had a picnic, and I sat and watched him paint the doctor's house as in payment, it was great, you know, it was great. I mean, it was important to me because of the integrity to do something that you said you were gonna do, you know. And then, so we didn't stay together. We were together months after that, but then I moved to San Francisco and David was drafted to Vietnam, but he did make it back. And he, like my husband, brought the ghost of Vietnam with him, of course, you know. And but I went to nursing school after that, and when my two kids were grade school, and the first 10 years I worked in a high-risk pregnancy inpatient, and then labor and delivery, and a freestanding birth center in Upper Park Heights, and I worked at Planned Parenthood for a while, helping with abortions, the recovery room, and then also we had a vasectomy clinic that I ran two nights a month, which was one. I don't know if they still have that, but it was great. The Popkins residents, urology residents, used to come over. So that's my abortion story. I do want to share one thing with you. Now, Lord, you have that? Yeah. So. And I do want to say that when I worked at Planned Parenthood, I felt it was a wonderful experience because it was like my love letter to give back to legal and safe abortions and also to abortion providers. And I can't believe what's happening, but anyway, I've been going to marches forever. And I take this with me. This is my second iteration, but it just says that I'm RN, and that when there's no access, rich women get abortions and poor working class women risk death. And I realized when I was doing this story that when I had my abortion, I was one of those poor and working class women. And I hope we can get it back soon, because women deserve human rights. Thank you.